Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me is the Doc Brown to my Marty McFly, Mike Perna. What's up today, Mike?
You know, I heard a recent bit of trivia. Well, it's not recent trivia, but I only heard about it just recently. Do you know that in the original script, Doc Brown was originally going to have a chimpanzee companion?
I did not know this.
In the original script, there was supposed to be a monkey in Back to the Future, but apparently some executive in the studio said, what was the quote that they said? It was something along the lines of, no movie with a monkey ever made money. So they took him out.
Well, that breaks my heart, because it would have went perfect if it had been portrayed by Lancelot Link.
Oh, gee, that is a deep, deep cut you just made, my friend. A deep, deep cut. I'm pretty confident that at least half, if not more, of our audience will have beyond no concept of what you just mentioned. And I'm a little worried about myself that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Man, okay, so Lancelot Link was one of my favorite shows when I could catch it. Like, it was something that was only showed, like once in a blue moon on Saturdays. And if you could find it, usually it was on WGN, I believe, out of Chicago, and it was just hilarious.
For those of you playing our home game and have no concept about this, Lancelot Link is basically it was a dubbed TV show, aka they showed a thing and then actors came by and dubbed the actual dialogue over what they shot. What they shot was chimpanzees in costumes doing stupid stuff, Lancelot Link supposedly being a spy. And what's it called? They had Mata Hari, yeah. Was the other monkey.
Oh, Lancelot!
Yeah. Oh, it was incredibly goofy and incredibly stupid, and I'm a little disappointed in myself for having that memory in my head, because there is infinitely more important things that I should be remembering, and yet that bit of stupidity, it's with me. It is with me forever.
Sorry. It was one of my favorite shows growing up, and I do enjoy that type of humor. So
I think my favorite part about this was that as you were gearing up to get ready and get started, like, I could see the smile on your face, like, I can't wait till I get to call Mike this.
Hey, last time I actually called you by your title, and yeah, this time I had to go all in. You know,
it's time to hit both ends of the spectrum. We give my actual title, and then you make a call back to Lancelot Link. So, dude, I'm here to tell you that I can only report on things that I've looked at. I have not. I don't know if it's just the post TavernCon shenanigans or what, but unless you want to talk about the occasional computer game, I have not sat down to play anything recently, except for the online game of Lords of Waterdeep that I have with some folks from the tavern.
Well, guess what, Mike? I have something to talk about today.
You do, because I believe that you threatened to talk to us about the Boy Scout game.
Yes, I did, because we had the first Boy Scout gaming day. It was on Sunday, and we're following up by this coming Friday. It'll be the Friday, actually, before this is released. We're having the final one. So it was great. It was awesome. It's epic. And then after that, I got to go to our youth group at church that evening and run another 1 hour really quick one shot.
Well, that is fantastic.
So we got to the comic shop. My buddy Chuck Cumbo came with me. We're going to split the kids up in case we had too many. And he took one group, and I took the other group. He ran 5th edition. We ran pretty much the same module, but we ran it differently. And I ran it under Castles and Crusades.
So how did that go? Because I've never personally played Castles and Crusades myself, but I know friend of the show, Derek White, like, that is his all-time favorite system, like, forever.
You know what? I really enjoyed it. The kids, you know, it's actually one of the kids, it was his first time role-playing, so he didn't really have anything in mind, per se, that he knew how to play. And the two other kids had played 5th edition before. One kid showed up with his own character sheet, even though I told him not to. And I tried to be like, well, here, you know, won't you use this character sheet, trying to give him a Castles and Crusades one. And he's like, no, I have my character right here. I've already made it. It's a half-orc barbarian. And I said, well, really, I have a half-orc barbarian right here already made out for you. And he's three levels higher than the one you've already made. And he wouldn't tear away from it. So I had to fudge some numbers for his rolls. But it was pretty good. One of the kids was my cousin's kid. And, you know, I could see where my son kind of gets it when it comes to taking trophies in game. So this he literally first cleric. He normally plays necromancers, but this time I asked him to play a cleric. That was great. On the first encounter they had was with 9 brigands. He took a head and put it on a stick and tied it to his horse.
Yeah, I believe we talked about that moment before. As I've said that I too have had those moments, especially in my teenage years, where the idea of parading a head on a pike seemed like the best way to game, the best kind of life.
Yeah, and the one kid that had never role-played before, when he did that, it just melted something in that child's heart. He's like, why did you do that? It's horrible. And it's, I'm like, man, it's just a game. We're role-playing. He's a cleric, and these people were going to kill you. And that's why he did this, and, you know, just to show other people to stay away from us, we mean business. He didn't like it at all.
Well, to be fair, you know you're in an interesting bit of business when your cleric is the one parading a head on a pike.
I never said he was a good cleric.
That is true. So kind of settling into the Boy Scout game, like, you're running it in Castles and Crusades. What is the general vibe? Like, I know in the off chance that somebody's going to listen, you know, you don't want to give away all your plot points, but I do want to kind of, now that you've had your first session, I want to hear kind of the vibe that you're going for here.
Well,
like, what's the general plot line?
General plot line. You heard a rumor that there's this old keep on top of a hill. 100 years ago, there was a bandit, you know, like kind of, they call it brigand back then. You know, we don't really call it brigand anymore, but he had collected many riches, but he worshipped an evil deity. And, you know, when his house was being ransacked, he killed his wife and his kid and his mistress and killed himself and hid all his gold and all his other things, and the kids had to go in there and try to figure out where the gold was and how to avoid any traps and stuff like that. So I did kill one kid while I was in there. He had to read that cursed scroll. I gave him the look of do not pick that up, do not read it, but he still picked it up and says, I'm going to read this thing.
That's always the best when you give, you're trying to give as many chances as you can to the GM. So you pick it up.
Yeah. What are you going to do with it?
No, yeah. No, you don't understand. So you pick it up.
Yeah. Well, the scroll, once you read the scroll, it activates the magic and it turns them into a scum creeper, which was this little creature that goes around the walls of crypts and eats the mold and mildew and all that stuff. And one of the other kids looked at it and said, huh, do we have anything to reverse that? And I was like, I'm pretty sure you don't. And then my cousin's kid walked over and stomped it and said, I'm going to put him out of his misery.
Oh, jeez.
That child about got up and walked away from the table after that.
Oh, jeez. I can't even... That's amazing.
But yeah.
I'm going to put him out of his misery. That's brilliant.
But it was good. It was good. We had lots of fun, though. So. And Chuck did a great job as well. He adds a little bit more flair. And, yeah, I didn't have the audio going like I usually do. And he had his audio going. And it was actually surprising some of the people in the comic shop when they'd hear a fireball shoot across the room. But they were enjoying it, though, as well. So I talked to the scouts that were with him afterwards, and they had a really good time. But then after church, or after that, I had to go straight to church. I had 30 minutes from when that ended to get to church and set up and let the youth group, who only one of them has ever role-played in their entire life before, and, you know, we split that up between my buddy Chase, and he met me there, and I had 5, he had 5, and we role-played with them, and They had a blast. They were asking the youth pastor, said, can we just do this next week instead of regular youth? And he's like, no. But he played too, and it, I think his reaction was the best reaction I've ever had, was that he's like, I've always wanted to play D&D, but I just never had the chance. And I said, well, now here's your chance. So he played D&D with us, and afterwards he said, so what do I need to learn how to roll run this at the house? I was like, well, son, let me help you out here.
Did I ever tell you that recently the youth pastor at our church walked up to me, and like I was just hanging out in the I was hanging out in the lobby just talking to people, and he comes walking over and he says, oh man, I've been meaning to tell you. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? He goes, I played D&D the other night. And I kind of loved it.
He was probably acting like it was some super secret that he didn't want anybody else to hear.
No, that's exactly it's exactly how that went down. He was approaching it like he was like one of those guys like in bad like Saturday morning cartoons with like a trench coat on the corner. Like, hey, I got your D&D here.
Got your dice right here.
But yeah, no, it was great. Like it's rare to never. That I hear somebody talk about the fact that they played D&D and really didn't enjoy themselves.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I think the only person who I've met that can say that is my wife, because she was mostly just humoring me in the first place.
Yeah, that's the same with my wife. She doesn't enjoy it because she believes that she doesn't have an imagination to do things like that, and it just really stresses her out. And, you know, I'm not going to make her do something that she doesn't want to do. If it stresses her out, then I'm not going to force her to do it. The kids, on the other hand, have tried their best to get her to play, and she still won't do it. Not at all.
See, I think that if Noah grows up and Noah looks at me and says that he really wants me to play D&D with him and he gets into that, and if he looked at Susan and said, hey, Mom, do you want to play with me? I'm pretty sure Suze would be up for that. But it'll probably end up being exactly like, you know, my policy for Suze as far as role-playing games was this. I said, give it an honest try. Like, not just do it to just go through the motions, but give it an honest try. And if you don't like it, I'm never going to ask you to do it again. And she did. She played a game of Victoriana where she played basically herself. And so I'm convinced that if she was to play another role-playing game, if Noah asks, she'll do it. She'll just roll herself again. And I'll be okay with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Jessica, she just, it was a Harry Potter thing I was running in GURPS a long time ago, and she just didn't really like it. But she did follow up with our youth, or not our youth group, but our small group one time. They begged me to run a game. She's like, fine, I'll play, but I'm not going to enjoy this at all. I was like, okay.
I don't understand that.
I know, she's already got her mind made up, but, oh well, we can't make them do the things that they don't want to do.
That is the case every time somebody either posts up on a forum or says something to me and is always like, how do I convince my significant other to play games? I'm like, you can't.
Well, I realize, though, if Jessica did enjoy role-playing games, I would be super poor because she would be buying them, too, and it wouldn't be good.
Yeah, no, I'm very thankful that Susan's not as into it as I am, because yeah, you're right. If both of us were into this, I think that we would be in my shelves would be in a much fuller state, but my wallet would be even emptier than it already is.
Yeah.
So in a way I'm thankful. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Noah, because I do want to play things like No Thank You Evil with him and, you know, get him think, because Susan and I are both very like, you know, we're still in that stage of, all right, now how do we want to raise this kid, as we've spent, you know, he literally, as of recording, he just turned 6 months old. So those of you who have been following the podcast through all the ups and downs of my baby boy's life, he's 6 months old today.
That's awesome.
And so he's getting to that point where it's we actually start seeing his like actual like personality and he's starting to make realizations of things. And he's gotten to the point where, like, he even had the ultimate con. It was, I was so impressed, I almost wasn't frustrated with it. You know how, obviously, you know, kids, when they want, you know, parental attention, they just make noise and start fussing. They're not really upset, they just start fussing. Well, Noah has become an artist at this. And so there have been times when he'll be fussing and like, we'll be in our room, you know, down the hall. And we're just like, nope, nope. And we're just waiting for the time when he's actually, like, hardcore crying. We go, okay, now we go.
Yeah. Well, Sammy does that too. He doesn't fuss, though. He coughs.
Oh, just wait, because this is how this story goes. He was, like, doing that half-fussing, I'm not really upset, I just want you to come. And so we actually ended up going downstairs, and so we were just hanging out. We had the monitor with us so that we could tell if he actually needed us or not. And at one point we decided, you know, not tied to him at all, we're like, let's just go upstairs. So we go upstairs, our foot hits the stairs. Now, we live in an old house. Our house is, you know, built in, like, the 1800s. And so our stairs creak like it's going out of style. And so he hears the creak. And before I even get to his doorway, he starts giggling. Like, I got you. So if this is this kid at 6 months, I cannot wait to turn him loose on some insane pizza shooting role-playing ridiculousness. Taking him out to Booger Falls and all that. I want that so bad.
Oh, man. That's cool. Yeah.
That does remind me, though. Your daughter was in the Boy Scout game.
Oh, no. She's going to be in it Friday.
Oh, she's in the upcoming game.
Yeah, she's at Jesus Camp right now.
I was curious because I know that there have been times when she has been excited about role-playing, and then some other times when she's been less than excited about role-playing. So I was curious as to how that went.
She goes through fits right now. It's like, it depends on who she's around, and if I'm being... She knows that it hurts me, so when she says she doesn't like to do things that she really likes to do, so she'll be like, role-playing's stupid, and she does that when she's mad at me. But before she left, for Jesus Campus, we like to call her in her house. She's like, I'm gonna play Friday when I get back. So she comes home about 2, then I'll swing by here and pick her up from the house, and then take her on with me to the comic shop so she can have fun. So she's excited about it, or she was before she left.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I think she did take a pack of cards though to camp, so at least she's getting some of that in.
There we go. I will say that I have been, you know, because of Noah and because of the fact that the guys I play with live significantly far away from me, it's like a 40, 45-minute drive from me, so it's hard for me to get down there to play D&D, yeah. So my monthly D&D game disappeared.
Yeah.
Well, at least as far as I'm concerned, my monthly D&D game disappeared. And so I found myself the other day just... For some reason, I'm like, man, you know, I just want to roll up a character. I want to create a story and roll up a character just for funsies.
Yeah. Well, at any time, you know that if you're just wanting to smash some orcs in the head, you can holler at me and I can set something up. And yes, I did just use the word holler, guys. I need to tell you something. I am from the Deep South, not Georgia, the Deep South. I'm from the Appalachia Mountains, and it's not Appalachia, it's Appalachia. Uh-huh. Like, I'm going to throw an Appalachia. So I do get kind of thick. We've went on tangents this entire day, so it's fine. I just want to point out to people I am from the South.
I'm pretty confident you don't have to point that out to people.
But yeah,
I'm pretty confident they're aware.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, there was something that was really fun about creating the character because, you know, even though he wasn't going to go on this grand adventure, like, it was just really fun coming up with what he was about, especially because I went out of my way to make a character in a class I've never actually played. I've been playing this game for literally decades. I have never played an honest-to-goodness wizard.
I have a secret.
What's that?
I've never played a wizard either.
For the longest time, I never have. It wasn't like I was avoiding it. It wasn't like I was, you know, somehow, like, turned off by all things magic. I, for some reason, just never played it. The only time I've ever played a magic-using class that wasn't a healer, like a cleric or a paladin, was a sorcerer. I've never played a wizard.
I'll tell you, 9 out of 10 times, I'm going to play a halfling, rogue. Rogues in general are my thing. Or a ranger. I've never really been drawn to using much magic.
Yeah, no, I started off my role-playing career as a dwarf cleric. I will probably forever be dwarf clerics, just because I thoroughly enjoy playing that combination.
Yeah.
But then again, I will play most anything as a dwarf. But yeah, it was really fun just to be like, especially with the way 5th edition does it. Like, as much as I love, you know, I'll say that I love playing Numenera as my favorite system, which it still is, as much as I want to get into some of these weirder, more obscure games, and as much as I play the two-player games, like Reflections and stuff like that, as far as making just random acts of character craziness, it's hard not to go to what 5th edition does.
Yeah.
Because it gives you so many different... I don't want to say, you know, controlled, because, I mean, it gives you lots of options, and you don't have to take any of them. But, like, I like the idea of, like, certain, like the bonds and the flaws and the philosophies and all that stuff. There are the ideals. All that stuff has a random table. And so it forces you to be like, okay, this guy's like this. And working the story together from all those pieces, you know, it actually makes me think about playing Once Upon a Time, which is one of my favorite, well, one of my favorite card games, as long as I have the right people playing with me. And it's that idea of just figuring out how to build story. And to really embrace creativity, because, you know, I've discovered that, you know, it's really easy to fall into a trope. I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in other people I've played with, that people will always play the same thing. And yes, you can't play this game for too long without somebody wanting to roll Dritzt, even if they've never heard or read a Dritzt book in their entire life.
I will let you know, this church group got to kill a very young Dritz. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
So it's nice to be able to force myself out of it. Because like, I was playing a wizard, I was playing a human. Two things that I either rarely to never actually play. I don't tend to like playing humans because I am one. And I'm like, why would I play a game where I can be what I already am?
Right. Well, you know, and I've always pointed out to people that the thing about D&D is do something you normally wouldn't do.
Right.
Like, get out of your comfort zone. I don't get out of my comfort zone, but I tell everybody else to get out of their comfort zone. But, and I think that's one of the main important things about it, because you actually get to learn what type of person you are once you do that.
Yeah, and the thing I love about it is that, you know, you were saying when it comes to your wife playing, how she doesn't think that she's a creative person. I have a very strong, I have strong feelings about the nature of creativity, because, I don't want to bust out into too much of a theological treatise here, but I believe that creativity is something that is innately in all of us as people who are made in the image of the Creator God. Mm-hmm. So there's no such thing as a person who isn't creative. The thing is that most of us either because of just sheer lack of trying, or because it was like either literally or figuratively beaten out of us, we let that creativity go to pot. We let it just kind of sit and just kind of wither. But it's never gone.
Yeah, I think one of the things that it's, you have to find your passion before you can untap your creativity on some people. Like, you know, that for a long time, Jessica crocheted. And that was her thing. I mean, she would literally sit there and watch TV and crochet. And she did things that I could never do. And I thought she was very creative. I still think she's creative. It's just that it's not her passion. And, you know, as much as I try and beg and plead for her to find a passion in role-playing, she doesn't. So, but it's one of those things. Passions, when you find that thing you are truly passionate about, you will get creative with it.
Well, and there's something to be said for that. Like, I remember, like, even like I mentioned Once Upon a Time. In the off chance that you've listened to this and you've never heard me talk about Once Upon a Time, you've never seen the article I wrote for our website, let me tell you about Once Upon a Time. Once Upon a Time is a card game where, depending on how many people are playing, you each get cards, a certain number of cards. These cards have things like, it's all the stuff that makes up stories. There's people, there's adjectives, there's stuff, there's setting, there's actions, there's all sorts of stuff. My favorite card, without a doubt, every time I mention this game, I cannot help but mention it because it's the most entertaining thing I've ever seen. It is This Animal Can Talk. And I love that card with a white hot passion. And so basically one person starts telling a story, and the goal is to play every card in your hand by telling the story. Every time you mention something on one of your cards, you play that card in front of you. Your goal is to tell the entire story to the point where you played every card in your hand, and you bring the story naturally to an end line, which is a card that you've gotten. Everybody gets one end line, and it literally is the line that you have to end the story on to win. All the while, as you're telling the story, people will be jumping in. Anytime you mention something that's on their cards, they get to take it. They get to become the storyteller and try to take the story towards their end line. I love this game as long as you're playing with the right people. And by right people, I don't mean necessarily gifted storytellers. Though, if you're playing it with some gifted storytellers, man, are you in for a good time. What I'm more interested in is people who don't care if they win.
People just want to have fun.
Right. Because if you win, and this has always been, and every time I've mentioned this, so sorry for people who've been with, I mean, it's been a long time, I think, so sorry for people who have been with us since the beginning, but there's one game that has forever burned in my memory, because it reminded me how this game in the wrong hands can be a terrible, awful thing. This guy literally sat there, and he's like, there was a troll who lived in a castle in the middle of a forest, and he had captured a princess. And every one of these, he was just dropping a card. And then he got to the end line. I forget exactly what the end line is, but it was basically something like you know, and she was freed and everybody was happy. Yay. And I just sat there and I'm like, I can never play this game with you again. Ever. But if you're playing with people who want to explore this, there's something really awesome that happens when you're playing this game. Like, the thing that I love about it is not just the fact that it gives you these prompts. It does give you the boundaries to kind of play around with the story. But I also love just the way you get to be kind of a participant in it, whether you're telling the story or not. Like, I love... The one story that's kind of my epitome of the good way this plays is that it was in the middle of a game at seminary, and there was a bunch of us playing. I think there was like seven of us playing. So it was a big game. And my buddy Wes and I were just going back and forth, just over and over again. We would just be trading cards, trading the storyteller mantle and all that. And we'd just be going back and forth. And after about I lost count of the number of times he and I traded this spot. I looked at the other, you know, five people at the table who we were playing with, and I'm like, man, I just want to apologize. Like, we've kind of been dominating this game, and I don't want to make, I want to make sure that you guys are having a good, and I couldn't even finish my little speech that I had intended because this person sitting next to me is like, shut up and get back to the game. What happened next? And I love all of this stuff because it's a moment of embracing the nature of creativity that for so often we want to think that you have to be spectacular. You have to be amazing at this stuff. And the reason I bring this up now is not only because of what you mentioned with your wife, but we're talking so much about role playing. Like, this is a role playing centered episode of this podcast, and it's perfect timing because the guys at Saving the Game just did one about becoming a new GM. And I, especially with you running multiple games in short succession and all that, and playing with groups and all this stuff, I think you'll probably have more to say about this too. But there are so many times when people are terrified of being a GM.
Yeah.
Because they think they can't do it.
So with me, I used to think that I was only a player. I only wanted to play, and that's all I really cared about. And I was afraid of it because I didn't understand it. And the moment that it really just clicked in my head, it wasn't actually but a couple years ago when it just clicked in my head, I could do this. You know, when I was sitting in my friend's living room on my little laptop teaching them how to play Savage Worlds. And once that clicked, a lot of other things just clicked into place. Like, and I'll tell any new person in D&D, the hardest thing that you ever do in D&D, whether you are playing or running a game, is creating a character. Once you get past that part, if you can master the ability to create a character, then you can do anything. I mean, as far as it goes mechanics wise, like you could run a game. You have to get good at telling stories. You do. You have to get really good at doing that. And I'm a really crappy DM. I'll tell people this straight up. But the thing is, though, I use props. I use sounds. I draw my stuff out. I use miniatures. I do everything that I can to bring the story out. And, you know, that's it. I mean, now when you understand this, how that once you understand that you can be this DM and you understand the mechanics of the game, boom, 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 you could run a game. You don't even have to prep half the time for it unless you really, really want to do it. So, I mean, you can just grab a module and you're like, well, I know how this module works, so now I can just read it out to these people and we can play. And there's your prep time. But I will say it does pay to pre-read your stuff before you play it. But, yeah.
Well, I think the big thing to realize is that, and I'm going to speak, you know, presumptively here, but I'm pretty sure that you're going to agree with me. I remember my early games running as GM.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll run games. Now, I'm there's a reason why Romo is our go-to GM on our YouTube channel. It's because he is a downright showman.
Yes.
He is a gifted individual. I would say that I'm fair. I provide an entertaining time. I never have anybody walk away from my table saying that they had a bad time, but I'm not like anything to write home about. But at the same point, I remember my early games and I'm like, wow, I was abysmal. I was horrible my early days. You know, talk about doing a module. I would literally read block text from a module and then be like, okay, now what happens? Like, it was awful. See, the thing about all of this stuff, the thing about creativity, the thing about all of this is that you have to be willing to do it even though you're not great at it yet.
Yeah, and that's really important. I mean, it's practice. It's practice. Telling a story takes time. I mean, we learn to read as kids, read aloud, but to really read with some emphasis in it, you have to practice. You have to sit there and, like, screw around with your voice and try to get things. The hardest thing for me ever was doing voices, because I do voices now whenever I play. And even when I'm playing a character, like if I'm getting to play in a game, and if I'm playing a halfling, you know dang straight, I'm going to be like, well, guys, let's hit the tavern. Have a good time tonight. You know, I want to do that. And just to add that extra flair to the game. And you have to get past that ability to, you know, that part of you that doesn't want to be embarrassed. But it's all about practice on that, you know.
Yeah, and it comes down to breaking down the fear of looking foolish.
Yes.
Because I promise you, every great GM out there, every person, and I'm really wishing that Roma was with us right now.
He is in spirit.
He is in spirit. We love him and miss him. But I really wish he was here to talk about this, because I know for a fact that he's going to tell stories the same way. Nobody starts out as a good game master. Uh-huh. Either you don't know the rules and you forget all that stupid stuff that can be really fiddly, or you care too much about the rules.
Yep.
And spend all your time looking up insignificant little nothing instead of actually playing the game. There are times that, yeah, maybe you don't know how to talk about setting. Maybe you do, you know, do something stupid and ridiculous. Then there are some times when even the best GMs out there, guess what? They do terrible things and screw stuff up because they're human beings and maybe they had an off night.
And there's lots of times where we fudge the numbers just to make the story go along the way we want it to go.
Exactly. Like, I started doing a Numenera game for our channel. And I'm hoping maybe one day we'll be able to pick that back up again. Or at least do a Numenera game. I don't know if we'll be able to do that one after that much time has gone by. But, like, I watched the first episode of me, and I'm like, man, I dropped the ball, like, 3 or 4 times when I really could have done something more worthwhile. But I didn't. You want to know why? Because I'm a human being. and I didn't have nearly as much prep time as I wanted. But and that's recorded on video. You can go to our YouTube channel right now and watch me be subpar. So, you know, I think that, you know, as I kind of wanted to jump into that because of that fact that there's so much, not only just in the spiritual realm, but like of existence that there's part of me that wants to look up. There's a cartoon. Have you ever seen Adventure Time?
Yes. I love that cartoon.
It's one of my favorite cartoons of all time. And there's one character named Jake the Dog. Now, if you don't know this cartoon, it's one of the most random, ridiculous cartoons ever. And it really does one of the best jobs of being random and ridiculous 1 second and incredibly profound the next. Yeah. Like, that show has some of the saddest, most poignant moments I've ever experienced in animation. But there's one line that, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's just a throwaway line. And
making bacon pancakes?
No, it's not that, though. Now I'm going to have to fight having that song in my head the rest of the night. Thank you very much. No, Jake has a line that I can't even remember what episode it was, but it was basically like, sucking at something is only the first step at being kind of good at something.
Yeah, I remember that line.
And it was like, it was just a blink and you'll miss it line. But I'm like, that is genius. Because it applies to so many things. And it especially, you know, is, you know, all over when it comes to the spiritual life and the Christian life. Because, man, I'm going to tell you, I was just telling the story a while. I forget what brought it up. Oh, because somebody was talking about the fact that when it was just the early stages of faith. And I was just like, yeah, I remember that. I remember when I was an absolute moron for Jesus. And it was, if I look back on my life when I first became a Christian, I was an arrogant, goofy, absolutely moronic fool. I knew nothing but thought I knew everything, which is the worst combination ever.
Can I ask you this question, though?
Uh-huh.
How many friends did you lose?
A lot.
Because you just wanted to tell them about Jesus and how you were worried about him?
Exactly.
I've lost some really close friends because of that. And it today, I mean, this is years ago, and today it still bothers me on this.
Yeah, and so to look at that time, I'd be like, man, I suck at this. I'm awful at this. But, you know, I could just kind of, you know, relegate myself to just being awful at it, but I didn't. I kept at it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so what I'm doing right now is incredibly foolish. I should not do that. But what should I do? And so I stepped into something different, something better. And I'm like, okay, I got this. I go, okay, now I should get some schooling and some training. And I got some schooling and some training. I go, okay, now I got some knowledge. And I'm realizing how much more there is to learn now that I have some knowledge. But everything comes back to, I just had to keep trying stuff. I tried being a youth leader before I knew what I was doing. I wasn't great at it. I spent, you know, almost decades in youth ministry. I was pretty good at it by the time I was done, but I'd still have a lot to learn. There's so much that I think we deny ourselves the chance to because we're not great at it right out of the gate, because we expect, especially when it comes to Christian stuff, we expect that if God's calling us to do something, we're automatically going to be good at it.
Yeah, it's not. No. I mean, I've had to learn, like, I remember when I first, before even I got into church, I could play the guitar. And, like, you know, just because I could play the guitar, people, when I got to church, like, well, you need to start playing it in worship. And I was like, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. And until I actually got to go in and practice, you know, it took a while, you know, before I was actually willing to do it. And, you know, it's just one of those things that just because God calls you to preach, you're still going to have to practice. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I get tested all the time on that, because usually at church, I can go weeks or months without preaching, and PJ calls me like, hey, you're going to preach this week? I'm like, I guess.
Well, and not only is it just a skill level kind of thing, because there's ways, like, there are some people who are just going to be naturally good at a thing.
Yeah.
But there's a level of experience that comes with doing stuff over and over and over again that isn't just getting good. It's about understanding your place in it. You know, you mentioned preaching. I had to do a ton of preaching classes. I had to do them in college. I had to do them in seminary, obviously. I think my favorite comment that I got from a professor, because there were certain professors who loved the way I preach and certain professors who hated the way I preach. And I think my favorite comment that I got was one of the first professors that I had, he after the sermon was over, he looked at the class and he says, I don't know about you guys, I might not be able to name every one of his points, but man, do I love listening to him talk. And I remember what he said. And, like, that was how I figured out that yeah, I am a average to fairly okay preacher. But I will argue that I am a pretty fantastic storyteller. And I found that out by preaching over and over and over again. I discovered that I had a certain place, a certain gift, a certain talent, a certain skill that was mine to have because I kept doing it over and over and over again.
Well, I'll tell you this, with me, on the whole preaching thing, a comment that I actually made to our youth pastor after D&D. I actually sent him a text because, you know, he sent me a text saying, thanks, this tonight was awesome. And I said, you know, if I could only preach the way I DM. Because, you know, with me DMing, I could do so much stuff on the fly. But when I preach, I prep weeks in advance. I've got notes. I want to make sure everything is exact because I don't want to tell anybody anything wrong.
Right.
Or at least...
As you should.
Yeah. Or at least I want to be able to appear that I'm doing everything on the fly on stage. But, yeah, that's my thing.
But, yeah, and I like I said, the reason I keep coming back to this is that idea that I know so many people who would be amazing behind a GM screen. I know, just by hanging out with them, just by the stories that they create, even those who play D&D but don't GM, by seeing the kind of depth of character that they create for themselves, I'm like you would be amazing behind that screen.
Yeah.
To let that level of storytelling loose on a world instead of just one individual, you would be amazing at this. But they're terrified because they think they're not going to be good. And I just want to shake them and be like, of course you're not going to be good. You're just starting. That's why you need to do it. It's why you need to start and you need to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean... And the cool thing is, though, the people that you're going to be playing with, if you spend the time and they see that you're trying to do everything you can to improve your skills, they're going to be very appreciative of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because one of the hardest things for us to find, the reason why I DM is out of necessity. Because I need my kids, you know, me and my kids, we didn't have anybody to play with. And I was like, well, I'm going to play. I'm going to get my kids to play. I feel like Michael Scott from The Office when he said he only wanted to have kids so he could have friends.
Yeah. One of the saddest moments on television.
I know. But still, though, the thing is, though, there, if people are willing to put up with you, that's awesome. And guess what? It's just going to get better for them. Sorry.
Well, no. There's so many ways that this applies. Like I said, it can be applied to anything. But we do want to try and keep it within the bounds of kind of Christian life and spirituality. So I kind of want to leave it with this. I went into Bible college saying, you know, I want to do something with ministry. And people be like, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't know. I just know I'm supposed to be doing something with ministry. And so I tried a little bit of everything. I tried children's ministry and quickly got out of that. I tried a bunch of different things, different ministry positions, different locations, different, you know, all sorts, different styles. I tried all of it because there are so many times that I found myself wondering, if I don't try this, am I denying the opportunity to have something awesome given to me and experienced?
Right.
And like, there's so much that we just kind of completely deny ourselves. There are so many times that we just completely miss the boat simply because we're terrified that we're not going to be good at a thing. And I'm thankful that I've given myself the opportunity to now realize that, of course, you're going to suck at it at first. You don't know what you're doing yet. Because once you get over that, it's amazing what you can accomplish. I was a member of the Fort Worth Swing Dance Syndicate, a.k.a. a group of people who would go out regularly to go swing dancing.
Now I'm picturing you in a pinstripe zoop suit trying to, you know.
You dance. Should. I did that every once in a while. But I was terrible at it. And I wasn't, like world class or anything by the time I was done, but I was confident enough. I had people, you know, the people I danced with had a good time. But yeah, I was miserable. I was terrible at it when I first started, but I kept going and I ended up really loving it. Even things like Bard and Bible. I didn't know what I was doing with Bard and Bible. If you look at the early episodes of that, they're completely different than how things look now. You want to know why? Because I was figuring out what I was doing. Heck, don't even begin to look at the first episodes of this podcast, because sweet Lord, between the crappy mic quality in the old ones and just a distinct lack of knowing what I was doing.
Hey, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah. But, like, there's so much that's out there that is just open to everybody. All you need to do is step into it. There are so many times when people have looked at me, not only with doing inroads, but with doing youth ministry and doing other stuff and just doing life in general. People are like, how do I know what God wants me to do? And I even did this with my wife not that long ago, because she, you know, she's trying to figure out, you know, for a good portion of her life, she felt like she wasn't able to do what she wanted to do. And she's kind of realized she's coming out of a lot of baggage of her past and realizing, no, I really can do stuff. And so she's like, well, how do I know what God wants me to do? I'm like, do it. Pick something and do it. Yeah. And if God wants you to do that, he's going to make it pretty obvious. Like, so much of it is about just taking the first step and trying it to see what it's like and see what it's about.
Yeah, my thing has always been, though, for people, that once you find the thing that God wants you to do, no matter how hard it is, you're going to be happy. Like, and not like happy superficially, you're going to have a joy about yourself because you're doing what God has called you to do. That, and that's my opinion. It may not be the same for other people. Like, for instance, I will give an example that at our previous church, nobody wanted to do children's ministry at all. But my wife jumped in and did it because nobody else would do it. Because she said, you know, my children need a spiritual education at church. But she was so miserable because that wasn't her calling.
Right.
And but when you get her around a group of women, in a, you know, kind of a leading role there, trying to explain things and do stuff like that, she's a completely different person. I've never seen this person before. She's open, she's loud, she's, you know, she's out there. She puts herself out there, and that's normally not what my wife does.
But if I look back on just how I ended up getting here, it's been just throughout all of it, there's been moments of, I'm just going to step into it and see what happens. I think to kind of summarize all of it, I'll talk about something that my professor and he was also my pastor and my mentor at the time. And I was thinking about going to seminary, but I didn't have the money. I didn't have, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I still didn't exactly know what it would mean for, like I didn't know what my ministry was going to look like. So I was going to seminary to get a degree for a ministry. I didn't know what it was going to be like. And I said, there's so many things that says I can't do this, that I'm not going to be able to pull this off. And he looked at me and he said, if you don't apply, because I was convinced I wasn't even going to bother applying. He goes, if you don't apply, you're denying God the opportunity to make it happen.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, you know, I look back on that and go, no, if God wanted it to happen, it'd happen anyway. But in that, like, I could, you know, do the theological rumba all over that thing. But at the same point, it's so true. There are so many times when we get in the way of something brilliant because we're too terrified to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Or too stupid to give it a shot. That's me all over.
To me, I think it's like I get too afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, fear and anxiety is one of my biggest downfalls on everything. And, you know, I think that whenever something that I know I need to do or I know I want to do, but I'm afraid of failure and I worry and I worry and I worry. And, of course, my wife always sits there. It's like, you know, It's a sin to worry, Daniel. You're sinning right now. Quit sinning. She likes to point that out. So.
But, yeah, so I guess if anything, as we kind of come to the close of this one, I kind of want to just put that out there, that there I don't know what it is. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, you need to get in the ministry, because that's a small window if you're listening to this right now. Maybe that is the case. Maybe you are listening to this and go, you know, maybe I will step into some kind of ministry, or I'll do youth group or choir at church, or maybe I'll do whatever. Maybe I'll step into some kind of leadership thing. That would be awesome if that's you listening right now. Please allow this to be the encouragement that gets you up and doing that. But I'm a firm believer that the spiritual life is not limited to the churchy stuff that we do.
Right.
That serving God is not limited to stuff that is labeled as churchy. So whatever it is, you know, I think that there's value in going out and trying stuff, going out and making stuff out. Like, yeah, maybe don't dive all in. Maybe just put your foot in. But when you put your foot in, you get to see what the water's like, and maybe you're going to find something just truly amazing. Find something that will change your existence. But you know, you're never going to know that unless you put your foot in, because at the end of the day, we're all relying on God to carry us anyway. We're all going to be just keep trying to be better than we were yesterday and relying on God to carry us through to tomorrow. So if that's the case, if we're all in that place, if we are all made in this image of God that allows us to be part of this, like again, don't think that you are not creative, that you are not part of this quote unquote elite group that's able to accomplish great things. Because yeah, we've been doing this podcast a long time. I've been especially doing this podcast for a long time, and you know, people actually listen to us.
I'm still amazed at that.
You know, and part of it is just because we get out here all the time and keep trying to do it better than we did before, and just watch as God increases what we're doing. So, you know, we've had a bunch of people over the years who have said that they were inspired by what we do. And I got to tell you, all it is getting out there and stepping into what God has you and just do it. And keep doing it and keep trying to get better, because we all have the ability to do just truly amazing stuff. We are all made in the image of God, and God is just a brilliant creator. And so if we're here to represent him, go out and make something, do something, you know, be something. Heck, we're talking, you know, being a GM, do that. Because every bit of it is something that can be considered an act of worship. To step into what God has made you to be can be considered an act of worship, as long as we remember to remember that God is the one who does it for us. So go out and do that. Be that GM, because sweet Lord, we need more of them.
Yes, we do.
All right, Daniel, I think that is a good place to wrap it up. Do you want to close this, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I haven't done this in a long time, guys. I remember the first time I ever did this, and as soon as we got off we turned the mics off, the first thing said to me was, man, you screwed that up. But we always need to remember, guys, that God is the game master, and no matter how the dice may fall, the game goes on.